for I don't want to run this race in vain. 3 weeks ago, I preached a sermon about the culture of white supremacy that haunts our nation. And I talked about how important it is to not be silent about things that matter. And after church at coffee hour, a couple of different people came up to me and said the same thing separately. They said, "What about Harvey Weinstein?" The people that came up to me, both of them were men. And they had been struck by the courage of the women who have come forward to tell the truth that they had been sexually harassed or abused by Weinstein or by other men. And I was heartened to realize that men in this congregation were thinking about this. We're in a new month now, and our worship theme for November is forgiveness. And I believe in forgiveness. As hard as it can be, I know you need to travel the way of forgiveness if you want to be free. But sometimes there's this desire for forgiveness that feels like a quick fix that can push people to move on too fast, which can do more harm than good when it's a desire to whitewash the past, to forgive and forget, as they say, to let the perpetrators off the hook. The recent revelations about Harvey Weinstein, one of the most powerful men in Hollywood, a contributor to liberal causes and candidates, are that he, for years, forced his own sexual hungers onto women who were seeking parts in his movies and jobs in his company. And it seems that others around him either enabled his behavior or looked the other way. There is a pattern and a history of men in power using that power to get what they want, including what they want from women. In our time, just think about how many prominent men have been named, have been accused of sexual misconduct. Harvey Weinstein, Bill O'Reilly, Roger Ailes, Bill Clinton, George H.W. Bush, Donald Trump. You could add other names, right? I want to acknowledge this is not an easy subject, particularly not here. The church has not had a particularly good history of celebrating our bodies or of acknowledging the fact that we are sexual beings. No wonder with all this repression that it comes out in unhealthy ways. One of the best things we do in our UU tradition is offer this comprehensive sexuality program for our young people. As I mentioned earlier, we had 18 young people from 3 congregations here Friday night and Saturday. And knowing that they and their leaders are doing this good work, it makes me more hopeful for our future. I've heard so many parents say, everybody should do this program. Everybody should do OWL. You know, I believe that sexual assault is more about power and control than it is about sex. And in most cultures of the world, men have been the ones holding on to that power for such a long time. And you know, it actually hasn't gone that well, right? Can I get an amen? My wife once met Archbishop Desmond Tutu, and she was very excited to meet him, and she told him about this women's chorus that she sings in, the fact that they have sung a number of South African freedom songs. That's where Desmond Tutu is from. And his response to her was this. He said, "More and more, I think it's time that we let women lead for a change. We men have had our chance. The world would be a peaceful place if women were in charge." Amen. Do you remember the biblical story about David and Bathsheba? King David was the greatest Hebrew king of all time. He was the one who, as a young boy, took his little slingshot and killed the evil Goliath, the giant, with one little stone. When the gospel writers wanted to establish Jesus' credibility in the nativity stories, they mentioned that his father Joseph was of the house and lineage of David. So he must be good and powerful. Many of the Psalms are attributed to David. He was a powerful and beloved leader. But one day, the second book of Samuel tells us, David was on the roof of his palace. And from that roof, he could see over the city. And he happened to notice this woman, Bathsheba, who was bathing. And the story tells us she was very beautiful. And so David sent for her and had her brought to him. The story doesn't tell us exactly what happened, whether he used force or not, but he committed adultery with her. Not long after that, Bathsheba sent word to King David that she was pregnant. And so he had a problem. And to solve this problem, do you remember what he did? Because Bathsheba was married to this man who was a soldier named Uriah. And so David talked to one of his generals and said, "Send Uriah to the part of the battle where the fighting is fiercest. And when the fighting is fiercest, have the other soldiers around Uriah fall back." And they did, and he was killed. After a time of mourning for her husband, David brought Bathsheba into his palace and eventually married her. But the story says, the thing David had done displeased the Lord, and God promised to punish David. I tell you this old, old story. What? 4,000, more than 4,000 years old, this story? Just to make the point that Harvey Weinstein and the others we read about these days, this is not a new story. Men have been taking advantage of women for a long time. Our history with power, whether it's political or financial or physical or relational power, our history is not very good, guys. It's striking that in the Hebrew scriptures, they have included this unflattering story about one of their heroes. And they tell us that eventually David did pay a price for his sins. But think about it nowadays. If a king or leader was caught in this kind of situation, what would they do? If they didn't have one already, the first thing they would do would be go out and hire a public relations consultant. You know, there are people who specialize in cleaning up this kind of thing. And then that leader probably would issue a half-hearted apology, saying he was sorry if anyone was hurt, but that was never his intent, of course. He might say that it was always consensual, might even try to blame the victims. You've seen this, right? Might say they are a bunch of liars, even though there are a lot of them sometimes. You've heard these kinds of apologies that are no apology at all. You know, I apologize if anyone was offended or hurt by my actions, but they don't understand. They are being too sensitive. I was just being a guy. Locker room talk. It's time someone says to these men, trying to race ahead to forgiveness, not so fast. Maybe that's something we need to hear ourselves too, especially us men, not so fast. Before you can get to any kind of forgiveness, first, you have to admit that you did something wrong, that you hurt somebody else. And you know, I know this can be hard to do because we like to think of ourselves as good, right? It's uncomfortable to acknowledge that you have done someone harm. This is one of the key steps in 12-step recovery programs. Making a searching and fearless moral inventory of yourself. Taking a full and honest accounting of what you have done. It takes some courage to say, I did something wrong. I am sorry. Can I help fix this? Can you forgive me? Some people seem unable to do this, particularly those who are blinded by their own privilege or narcissism, people who are used to getting their own way. As one children's story puts it, people who break easily or who have sharp edges or have to be carefully kept. These days, I find myself daydreaming, fantasizing maybe about the moment that finally brought down Joe McCarthy back in the 50s, leader of the Communist Inquisition of those days. A man named Joseph Welch finally stood up to McCarthy, and he said words that I hope we never forget. Have you no sense of decency, sir? At long last, have you left no sense of decency? These days, I want to ask a similar question of our leaders, the powerful men on both sides who seem unable to tell the truth, unable to admit it when they have done something wrong. I want to ask them, have you no sense of shame? I understand that shame can be harmful, and some people carry shame for far too long. But there are some people who ought to be ashamed for the hurtful and harmful things that they have done. And I'm not just talking about our leaders. The divisiveness in our country and the prevalence of social media these days have fostered this avalanche of mean-spirited words and actions. And you know, on the rare occasion when somebody gets called out for their shameful behavior, they usually respond either by doubling down on the original attack, or at best offering a lame half apology. Perhaps we need a renewed appreciation for the healthy aspects of shame. I never thought I'd be in a UU congregation standing up preaching on behalf of shame, but we are living in crazy times. Because it is shame and regret, once acknowledged, that force us to admit our wrongdoings and seek to make amends and finally to ask for forgiveness. Isn't it painfully clear these days that we need reminding that we belong to one another, that we are each other's keepers? As Gwendolyn Brooks wrote, we are each other's business. We are each other's magnitude and bond. We need to have hearts that hurt when we wrong someone else. And if we don't, what hope is there for us? I believe that we are all redeemable, that there is always the possibility of forgiveness and reconciliation, coming to our senses and coming home. But this takes work. It takes time and attention. It takes a willingness to be uncomfortable. Isn't this precisely what these days are asking of us? It's what Courtney Martin is asking of men these days, to acknowledge what we owe to women, to listen to their stories, especially to what is troubling and uncomfortable. In her words, feel the sadness of living in a world like this. If you are capable, and even if you aren't sure you are, feel the sadness of being part of a group of people that has most violently and repeatedly created and maintained a world like this. Feel the excruciating pain of complicity. Don't soothe it with thoughts of your own exceptionalism. Don't jump to perform your love of women. Don't talk about your mother or sister or daughter. Just sit. Feel the feelings. You honor the pain that has been expressed so courageously by giving yourself over to the discomfort of actually feeling what it is to live in this world, a world filled with sexual harassment and assault as a man. Sitting with that discomfort will change you, and the changed you can then take action with a different kind of wisdom. This is holy work she is calling us to. It requires a certain depth and heart to hold such pain and discomfort. And I hope being part of this church is helping you develop this kind of spiritual strength and resilience. It's universalism at its best, trusting that we are part of a great love that will never let us go, so that we can admit our faults, and we can ask for forgiveness. We can find our way back to that great love. We can share it with others in need of it. And you know, this isn't work just for men. Courtney Martin says she is trying to do this herself as a white woman. She's sitting with the discomfort and pain of being white in our racist culture. She writes, she's trying to actually feel the grief and unpack the privileges of being white in this time of ascendant white supremacy. With our awareness these days of violence against women, the growing number of women saying, me too. I hope I'm not being too optimistic here, but I hope we might be at a turning point, that we might be ready to make a change. But that will be up to those of us who have the power. Are we men ready to admit that we have a problem, that we have participated in and benefited from this male-dominated system, that we have not been good and trustworthy friends to women, not as good as we could be. For thousands of years, prophets have called upon people to turn away from their selfishness and their sinfulness, to choose life and love and liberation. Don't we need to hear their call in these days? Their call to help bind up the broken and set the captives free. May this be our prayer and our commitment to do our own hard work and to join with others in doing it, so that one day justice shall roll down like waters and righteousness like an ever-flowing stream. Amen.